Well, first we thought we'd better tell you who we are, because we're not just Lauro's dad or mum, as we often get referred to by David. It's usually, oh, Lauro's mum does that, or Lauro's dad can help you. And you start to think, who am I? Well, anyway, so we thought we'd tell you a bit about what we've done in the workplace, because we have had a life there as well. When I left uni, I trained as a management accountant with Kodak, and then I left to have Chris. And I've also been the accountant for the Diocese of Llandaff in Wales when we lived here before, an FE lecturer in business and accounts in Bolton, financial controller, not as my nephew Timmy used to like to tell his friends, the fat controller, for Manchester Tech. And then I was manager of Bolton Education Action Zone, working with 27 schools. We had a short spell in the US. Ian's going to tell you a bit about that. And currently, I'm the finance manager for a public relations company in Cardiff. But mostly, really, I'm just Noah's nan. So Ian's going to tell you what he's done.
Not a lot. Sorry, not a lot. Yeah, I've actually worked for over 30 years. I know you can't believe that because I look so young. thanks for that. As an accountant stroke business consultant, I started off in KPMG in London, which is KPMG at the time was one of the largest, is the largest accountants probably in the world at that time. Then I had sort of three years with Wix Building Supplies. So don't buy your stuff from there. No, I'm just kidding. Then I worked with PricewaterhouseCoopers, and I was there for too many years. And even during that time, I had sort of a few months crossover with going in the workplace. Now, that was one of the hardest challenges. But I managed to get through that. And, I even had my own consultancy business for a short time. And we, as Julie said, we worked for 4 years in the States. And at different times, I've had over 30 staff reporting to me. So that gives you enough headaches on its own. But I wanted to show you, but for this last year, I've been battling with cancer. In fact, I've been battling with cancer for the last 3.5-4 years, so what the heck, we're still above ground, and so we might as well have some fun along the way. So what I wanted to do is show you some of the fun that we had in the States. This is just a promotional video clip that our company put together. And it just gives you a better insight in terms of who we are and, you know, what we did whilst we're in America, apart from eating too much food. I've got to keep talking because Alistair says that it takes time for the old lovely technical stuff to work. Anyway, we should be there in a minute. It's exciting, this, isn't it?
The other one.
We're here now.
Here we go.
This is one of our friends, Billy.
This man right here is my great grandfather. He's the first chaplain in our family.
So that's what we did. We worked for a company that herded cats. So if you do happen to lose your cat, then, you know, we can get one of our friends over from America to maybe help you find your cat, and then they get home. So that was a nice time. If you believe that, you need to believe anything. But that gives you a brief insight in terms of who we are. But clearly, sort of, we now want to get a little bit more serious. And what you've realized over this 30 years is that relationships in the workplace are not straightforward. We wish they were. And expressing our faith in the context of our work isn't always easy. Having said that, it's an incredible place for us to express our faith. And we're going to sort of, the text for today is on Daniel 6, and so Julie's going to be speaking more about that. But we'll see, I think the passage shows us, if we put up, have we got a slot?
No.
Okay. We see that the passage shows us that the relationships are complex, and we've got people at all sorts of different levels to relate to. We've got people that are bosses, sometimes they're good, and sometimes we love them dearly. We've got sort of people that work with us, and we most of the time that's pretty good, but sometimes we do get the odd pain in the whatever. And we also have relationships with our customers and our suppliers. And so we've got so many different opportunities to network and relate in so many different ways. And what we want to do is, talk about, Julie's sort of is going to share a bit about her experience in the workplace.
He's got his set that hasn't got marked up with my notes, you see. So with the PowerPoint then, we're looking at relationships in the workplace. And in some ways, I thought these should be so much easier than other relationships because there's often a clearly defined hierarchy or structure. There's organisation charts, job titles, job descriptions. Depending on how big an organisation you work for, there may be many, many layers of that. There's often pay structures that, in another way, try and point out the relationship between people. It's much more defined than, say, a family or a friendship. So in Daniel 6, I was looking at that, and the workplace organisation chart that Darius came up with at first would have looked a bit like this. You can see we've got there, if we go to the text on the next slide, where Darius has put in order a structure. He's got three vice regents, he's got 120 governors, and he thinks, oh, great, I'm at the top, three guys, then these guys. That'll sort everybody out, keep it all neat and tidy. Then it comes about that Daniel's actually way above the other guys, and he sees that he's just amazing in the workplace, that Daniel was brimming with spirit and intelligence. And so he redesigns his organisational chart, and now it looks like this. So now we've got Daniel promoted and everybody else reporting to Daniel and then into Darius. And Darius must have thought, yeah, that's terrific. You know, I've recognised the great guy, I've put him in place. And he'd have been really, really pleased with that and thought, this is a great structure. But of course, people aren't just little boxes on bits of paper. People are much more complex than that. And we see that in Daniel, the changes that the king made caused tension. For many of us, there may have been times where there's been changes in your workplace that caused tension. People don't always like change very much. And for Daniel, we got some jealousy and some really pretty serious workplace bullying and manipulation going on. It got so serious that Daniel's colleagues persuaded the king to pass a law, the result of which was that poor old Daniel gets chucked in a den of lions. So I set to thinking, so how did Daniel handle all this? We see clear evidence in the scripture of his good character, so that's important, and even his enemies can't dig up any dirt on him. But Daniel handled it by making sure his first priority was his relationship with God. In Daniel 6:10, we see when Daniel learned the decree had been signed and posted, he continued to pray, just as he had always done. So we see that he's a regular man of prayer. His house had windows in the upstairs that opened towards Jerusalem. He's praying openly. And three times a day he knelt there in prayer, thanking and praising his God. And that's the key for us. It's certainly been the key in my life. If I don't have a secure, well-tended relationship with God, if I'm not taking care of that, it's really, really tough to get any of my other relationships right, especially relationships at work. And God's been showing me this again recently. He's shown me it a number of times in my life, but I'm a bit of a slow learner, and he tends to have to show me things time and time again. So it's really important that we're on that firm foundation, that it's rock, not sand. When we face problems, we can stand firm in the Lord. Our security needs to come from the fact that we're believers and co-heirs with Christ, not from what we do or what other people think of us. We work out our other relationships through our relationship with the Lord. It's pretty basic stuff, really, and Jesus put it like this in Matthew 22:37-39. Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbour as yourself." Works out pretty good for Daniel doing this, putting God first. God takes care of him. The king, his boss, is even more delighted with him, and the king gives glory to Daniel's God. I took this bit from the message at the end of the story. Are you like me? I always like to turn to the end of the book first before I read the rest to see actually if it's got a good ending before I start. And this one does, for Daniel at least. Not so great for the guys who were being against him. It says in verse 21 onwards, "O king, live forever," said Daniel. "My God sent his angel, who closed the mouths of the lions so they would not hurt me. I've been found innocent before God and also before you, O king. I've done nothing to harm ye." When the king heard these words, he was happy. He ordered Daniel taken up out of the den, and when he was hauled up, there wasn't a scratch on him. He trusted his God. Then the king commanded that the conspirators who had informed on Daniel be thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. Before they hit the floor, the lions had them in their jaws, tearing them to pieces. King Darius published this proclamation to every race, colour and creed on earth. "Peace to you, abundant peace. I decree that Daniel's God shall be worshipped and feared in all parts of my kingdom. He is the living God, world without end. His kingdom never fails. His rule continues eternally. He is a saviour and rescuer. He performs astonishing miracles in heaven and on earth. He saved Daniel from the power of the lions." From then on, Daniel was treated well during the reign of Darius and also in the following reign of Cyrus the Persian. I'll hand you back to Ian now because he just wants to look a bit more closely at some of those relationships he's talking about.
Yeah, I want to start off by sort of talking about relationships with our bosses. They're not always straightforward, but Daniel had many attributes already which helped him get favor with the boss. I mean, this is a sort of little bit of a description of me, really. He was good looking. He was intelligent. He had wisdom, he had understanding, and he also had discernment. So as I said, just like me. He'd also got himself trained up. He spent 3 years being trained up before they let him loose on the king. And that's important for us in the workplace to make sure we get ourselves trained up. And he used his God-given gifts in the workplace. That's incredibly important because we've got so many advantages over our work colleagues because we've got God-given gifts as well. For Daniel, it was interpreting dreams. And he had a good relationship with all his bosses by doing a really good job. He worked for good old Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, and Darius. And with all of them, he was sort of looked upon favorably, obviously until he got into the lion's den. But he did have an extraordinary spirit as well. And what we've got to realize is with God in us, we are going to stand out. And with God on our side, also Daniel didn't have any fear of his boss. I've sort of seen situations. I know when I started off in my work life, there was a degree of, oh, is he going to like me? Is he going to respect me? Is he going to, you know, give me favor? And, you know, to some degree, a little bit of fear. But Daniel had no fear. He trusted in God, and he put God first rather than putting his boss first. And even though it nearly cost him his life. So we can learn much by following Daniel's example. But what I want to do is give you a couple of examples from my own life. Some 20 years ago now, we moved up to Manchester, which, you know, and I was given the role of establishing a grants practice. So what does that mean? We effectively used to go to the government and ask them for money for companies to set up in high unemployment areas. So many years ago, you'll see the likes of Sony out at Pencoyd, where they employ a few thousand people. And I was involved in, you know, helping Sony establish their factory in Pencoyd. But I went up to Manchester and, you know, was promised a lot of things. And the second job I won, and I won this within my sort of second week of work, was with a household name client. And I was sort of won a £75,000 fee, which was quite a reasonable size for a one-man band. And I was thinking, yes, God's on my side. But what happened is the client effectively sort of, and you had to demonstrate that the client needed the money to make the project happen. They were looking to create sort of, you know, a couple of hundred jobs. And what they said is, Ian, we want you to make up a story as to why we need the money. And my boss was pretty okay with that. And he said, yeah, Ian, you can do that. That's, you've worked, you know, you've given out £100 million in the Welsh office. So now I want you to sort of write a story for the client as to, you know, so that they can get their, you know, £1 million or £2 million. So the problem was, I said, no. I'm here for the long term. I'm not here for the short term. You know, I'm going to maintain my integrity and not just make up stories. Now, that nearly cost me my job. We'd only been up into Manchester for probably about 3 weeks. I had sort of ex-colleagues and various other people sort of throwing out, I know you did a good job in Cardiff, but effectively, I understand things aren't going well for you in Manchester. I had sort of people come along and sort of say that, you know, well, in fact, my boss promised me promotion when I was, by, you know, if you go up to the Northwest and go up to Manchester, I'll give you promotion. But that went by the way. And so that was quite tough, but I sort of said to God, we've got to stand up for you. I've always stood up for you. And I'm not going to do something that I see is wrong in your eyes just to get myself favor with my bosses. So that was a short term, but in the long term, I effectively, you know, to cut a long story short, then negotiated over £300 million for companies looking to invest across the world, work with many household names. I got a lot of favor with my bosses eventually. I got a lot of good comments from government officials and inward investment agencies. And I was really blessed. And I even had one client after I sort of felt like the Lord say, you know, I want you to leave PricewaterhouseCoopers. They even gave me a bonus or a gift of £50,000 to help establish my business up. They said, we've already paid PricewaterhouseCoopers $250,000 for your services, but now you're going on your own. We want to give you a personal gift. So like Daniel, we can receive favor in the workplace by putting God first. And I want to give another example, and this isn't to put me up, because really it's all God. You know, I'm not sort of saying, whoopee-doo here, and didn't you do a wonderful God job? You put God first. Yeah, I did do a good job by putting God first, but effectively the glory of all that we do, you know, goes to him. Let me give you another example. I was sort of due to go to Ireland. There was a client of mine that was looking to establish a call center there. They were going to create sort of 200 or 250 jobs. And there I think we were in somewhere like Kilkenny. What happened is Julie and I and a few others from Manchester and in terms of the US, America, we were on a ministry trip in the Czech Republic, and we'd seen God do some incredible stuff. You know, we'd seen sort of even the people, the hotel staff, came to know the Lord through just seeing everything that went on, because God showed up powerfully. Now, the night that I was due to catch an early flight, and so what? But sadly, what happened is there was incredible storms which knocked down, you know, trees, and basically we couldn't get out for, and I couldn't get them there to meet my client that particular day. So I was thinking, oh dear, they're not going to be best pleased with me, but what can you do, you know? So I managed to get out there the following day, and I got there for the evening meal. And there I am, was met up with my sort of client. There was three directors from this firm, and there was two members from the Irish Development Agency. And we're all sort of having a good time. And then the Irish Development Agency, one of the guys there, sort of says to our client, we really want you to come to Ireland. So I'm going to give you the best package. Now, you know, I then said, so what's the best package? You know, it's all well and good telling, you know, yes, you're going to give this the best package, but what is it? And the guy realized he shouldn't have said that. And I actually went after that client for probably about, from the idea to the Irish Development Agency, for 25 to 30 minutes, just saying, you need to tell my client what the best package is. And I'm sort of saying to the, even, do you ever have this situation in the workplace where you think you're almost operating out of character? Because I was operating out of character to some degree. And so I said to the Lord, in the middle of this, you know, whilst I'm sort of at the same grill in this guy, I said, why am I acting like this? And because this is a bit, you know, aggressive. And he said, Ian, you've got to trust me on this. So I carried on grilling him for a little bit longer. And then I said to the, then it suddenly came out. I said to them all, these business people, I said, you may think I'm passionate about my client, but I'm significantly more passionate about the Lord and about my God and the incredible stuff that he does in the lives of the people that I saw last week, and basically witnessed to this client, you know, for, and all these business people, whether they liked it or not, you know, for the next 10 to 15 minutes about all the stuff that God had done. So I'm thinking, okay, this could be quite interesting, you know, what will be the feedback? And what happened is, You know, you could see that the IDA probably weren't totally happy with me because I'd given one of the guys a really hard time. But the boss, the managing director for the client, said to me over breakfast the following day, he says, I woke up this morning and saw the beautiful view that we had outside, and I just want you to know, Ian, that there's a God who loves you. Now, this guy wasn't a Christian. He was probably more like, I mean, he did do sort of Greek Orthodox, but he wasn't practicing it. And he was more likely Greek Mafia than Greek Orthodox. But it was incredible. But the sort of story didn't end there. I ended up sort of, because I actually believe that, you know, we're called to sort of be, you know, really relational with people and keep relationships going and not just, you know, see them as what we can get out of them. But so I kept, you know, and sort of went for the odd beer with them now and again, you know, sort of, kept relationship with them for over 2 years. And then when I sort of went and stood on my own, you know, sort of as a consultant on my own, one of the things that we're also passionate about is children at risk. And to cut a long story short, that client opened the doors for myself and a couple of members from Jubilee Action to effectively to talk to all of their 600 staff about a Christian project that Jubilee Action were fronting in Rwanda. And they effectively have invested thousands and thousands of pounds in this project to set up child-headed households, hospitals, schools, and have continued to do so. And that's all from that sort of, you know, crazy time in Ireland. But I also want to go on briefly about sort of, Judy's going to talk mostly about this, but relationships with our work colleagues, and just draw out a couple of things. Daniel, you know, received piles of accusation, got effectively put in a place where he was manipulated, some might say, or put himself where effectively, because he wasn't going to play up to the boss's ego, he was ended up putting in the lion's den. But interestingly, I know sort of Darius effectively took, you know, control of the whole situation afterwards and chucked all those people that accused him in the lion's den and chucked them in the lion's den and say, have some of your own medicine. But effectively, Daniel himself never slagged off his fellow employees. He never tried to defend himself. He never sort of put himself in a position where, say, King, no, I always support you. He allowed the whole situation to take its course. And I think some of us will face situations where in the natural we want to defend ourselves, particularly to our bosses. But I think sometimes we might be better off saying nothing and allowing things to take its course and allowing God to put things right. Because our workplace is a spiritual battlefield. And as spiritual beings, the truth is, we will face opposition at times. You know, there will be people that will, for want of a better term, manifest. And sort of all sorts of tough things will come out of their mouth. But we need to recognize the source of what that is, wear the full armor of God, and realize that we've got incredible weapons to overcome as well. And so the best way to sort of defeat the enemy I've found in the workplace is to love and to pray and to use the spiritual gifts God has given us. And if our faith is attacked, to stand up for our faith. And I've got, you know, many stories, but I'm just going to give you one very brief story of using our spiritual gifts in the workplace. I had a situation where I had a secretary who was just appointed to me. You know, she'd work with me for about, you know, 1 day or 2 days. And Diane says to me, "Ian, your files are a mess." I couldn't believe that. You know, I thought I was totally tidy. Not. So she ended up sort of coming to my office and putting my files all straight. But it doesn't take long for us to actually see what's going on in people's lives. Because they don't have to say anything, but God's given us eyes to actually sort of see what's going on in people's lives. So I remember sort of within, you know, probably a couple of hours, started to say, you know, "I just want you to know, blah, blah, blah. I just wanted you to know that this is, you know," because I won't go into the personal stuff, but effectively, to cut a long story short on that one, then I found out that her dad had cancer and he was dying, and I was given the opportunity to actually go around and see him and pray for him a couple of times. I wish we could see more prayers answered when we cry out to God to heal, but I think we will see more. But at least I had the opportunity to do so. I also, she was sort of saying, I'm in an airing about whether she should go for a promotion. But because I saw effectively the skills that God had placed in her, I said, "Go for promotion, even though you're the best secretary I've ever had. I don't want to lose you, but I do want you to get to do your best and go for the best that you can." And she got promotion, which gave her a significant sort of pay rise. And it was incredible. But I also said to her, if you want to sort of, because I touched on a sort of, you know, a couple of thing areas in her life, I said, if you really want to see a difference in your own personal life, then I do believe that you've got to, you know, come to know God, come to know Jesus. And she had a little bit of teaching on that, but not a lot. So she came to our church. I invited her because it was sort of sensible for Julie to get involved as well. And we were able to minister more deeply into her life. And she ended up, you know, coming to know and love the Lord and, you know, doing incredible stuff for a season. So that's just one story, but, you know, I've got many more. But I want to pass over to Julie to effectively take on about the joys of working in the workplace.
I don't need that one.
Oh, yeah, you don't.
That'd be confusing. Work for me has been pretty tough recently. Since we came back from the States, I've now been 1 year in the job I'm in, and it's been quite strange. In America, we were in a company where most of my colleagues were Christians. We lived in an area where most people were Christians. And then after 4 years, I'd fairly well settled into that. I'd settled into the fact that most people wanted the best for me and would speak the truth to me and would be okay with me. The company I'm in at the minute is not a Christian environment, to put it mildly, and it has been pretty strange. The first 2 months I was there, I got the remit from the chairman to investigate a difficult member of the management team, discovered he'd been dabbling in quite a lot of things that were not good for the company, a man of very little integrity. The result of that was that he left at Christmas. The current boss I have a very good relationship with, who's the owner of the company, and I get on well with him, and I know that he trusts and values me, and that's helped me as a lot, as at the moment my assistant is not been easy to get on with. I found some errors she had made. She got very upset with that, and to cut a very long story short, she just walked out and has now been off sick for 3 months with depression, and is trying to get a sort of constructive dismissal. We haven't dismissed her, and she's actually just returned to work this week, so I'm now trying to walk through that. In all that, I haven't always got it right, but what I've been trying to do is making sure I pray about it and talk to God about it. being careful and sharing appropriately in a safe place. So I've shared a little bit in home group and had some prayer there, which has been really helpful. Trying not to whinge and moan, except to Ian. He's my whinge and moan person. And trying to make sure I'm on track with God and examining my own heart, making sure that I am clean in this, that I'm not trying to get my own back, be difficult or be awkward myself, and walking in forgiveness. So all those things that God teaches us about in all relationships, the workplace is no different. It's if we've had an argument with someone in the family. But obviously in the workplace, we don't choose the people that we're with like we would choose our friends. So that's been that at the moment. And in that, I felt that God's shown me a few things. He's been talking to me about a few things should be on our next slide. Keep going. Yeah, there we go. He was talking to me about appropriate relationships. I think in my last 4 years, I'd been used to being very open with people, totally open. And he was showing me that there can be pitfalls in work relationships where we may do it and others may do it, where we seek to get our needs for love and acceptance and comfort, for instance, met through other people rather than through God. I've seen in the past that codependency can be a real issue in the workplace. When I was working with the schools, we had a head and deputy who were a standing joke to everybody else because they were so joined at the hip. You could never see one without the other. They'd start and finish each other's sentences and really behave much more like an old married couple than colleagues in the workplace. And that made it actually very hard for the other staff and very hard for other people to work with them. At work, we deal with a lot of people who have no relationship with our Jesus. And often they'll try and get us to meet their needs. So where I am now, we have a lovely chap, but he just loves to talk all the time. So you have to learn how to lovingly manage that so you can get some work done. Other people might try to drag you into their behaviour patterns and get you enlisted in their group, be it the office moaner or the classroom, you know, the staff room gossip, whatever it is. And that sounds like a minefield, and it is a minefield sometimes, our relationships at work. But the great thing is we have the master of relationships, God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, to help us through all this. And with prayer and wisdom, it makes a difference. He's also been talking to me about having healthy boundaries. Because we're Christians, we're trained to be really loving and caring for people. And that can make us targets sometimes for the folks who want to suck us dry. We need to have wisdom asking God what it's right to do. Jesus did that. He used to say, ask the Lord and do what he saw the Father doing. At one time, I worked for a lovely Liverpudlian boss. It was great fun. Laugh a minute. We used to have a tremendous time at work. But he had his own ways of doing things and liked to take a few shortcuts now and again. He particularly liked to involve us with working with people he'd met somewhere or knew from the past. We didn't like to bother too much with interviews and stuff like that. So the end result of that was we ended up with a lady coming to be our admin assistant he'd met somewhere. And God was showing me in this that we have to be careful about how open we are at different levels, you know, to have appropriateness in that. Obviously, with God, he knows us inside out. He knows everything about us, and we're totally open. There's no point in trying to hide. Old Jonah tried to do that, and we saw what happened to him. Everything about us is known to the Lord. With people we choose to spend our lives with, our marriage partners, our very close friends, we would be pretty open and transparent. With our boss, our colleagues, our contacts in the workplace, we need wisdom in how much we share and how deeply. You know, Daniel's colleagues tried to dig the dirt on him. The verse says they were looking for how to find something bad about him. They couldn't. And it says, we're never going to find anything against this Daniel unless we can cook up something religious. And that struck a note in me, nothing like the same experience as Daniel. But I do remember several years ago with this admin lady, how I felt like she almost manipulated my Christianity and my desire, you know, my love for the Lord and my love for her in some ways. This sweet lady was a passive resistor. She was one who never did the job that she was actually hired to do. She did the job she wanted to do that was actually quite different. So that was hard. And the issue there was she actually wanted me to become her best friend. You know, she wanted a best friend. Her marriage was tough. There were several things going on in her life, and she was desperate for that friendship. And in the early days, I was excited about witnessing to her and telling her about the Lord, as I would with anyone. And not, you know, all the time and trying to shove it down her throat, but she was very receptive. She came to several evangelism things we did. She was always asking me questions about my Jesus. So my heart was excited. But when I sought the Lord with discernment, I realized that she was actually using it to manipulate me, to try and get me to do things for her and to be closer to her. There was a bit of a victim mentality with her as well, and sometimes I'd find myself getting irritated with her and not understanding why. Anyway, when I sought the Lord on it and got some discernment, it did end happily. I found her a job in the council that was actually much more suited to the kind of thing she wanted to do, which was talk on the phone rather than actually do the work. And I eventually had to get her to realise that my role was not to be her best friend, her marriage counsellor, auntie to her children, as she wished me to be. I'm not saying there that you can't have brilliant workplace friendships, because we do, but it's about discernment from the Lord and working out who you get really close to and who you build those with. You know, I've had some great friends in my working life, some of them from Kodak days that I'm still in touch with now. And I know through talking at house group too, we've been talking a bit about this there, the child protection thing raised some of it for us, that teachers have to have a lot of care on boundaries with their students and parents. And even when I was teaching adults, you do have to be quite careful sometimes, because students will push you. They'll want to get into your life. They'll want to do things with you outside of work maybe that may or may not be appropriate. We've been talking too at house group about wisdom in the use of Facebook and Twitter and things like that, because we've got a whole other aspect of relationship there, that cyber relationship stuff now, where we'd all need to be pretty wise too. Who do we want on there seeing everything we've done? Or seeing all our photographs of our kids and so on. The next bit was the using the spiritual gifts, and Ian's touched on this a bit already, and I know for me that gift of discernment was really helpful there, and knowledge and prophecy have been good. Praying for people too has been terrific. In my teaching days, I used to pray for my students regularly, and I'd love to tell you that that's just because I'm a Christian, but actually it started out from a difficult situation where I thought, oh my goodness, I've got to do something. When I first started teaching, I've been through the usual kind of exam-orientated school and all that. Taking exams is part of my life, as it will be for many of you. I look around, I see many of you in the college thing. But I was teaching adults, many of whom were women returners, and some who'd left school and never sat an exam. And the first time I had all my students sit in their first AAT exam, it was, in the middle of it, one of them got up and ran away. And she panicked. It just got too much for her, the whole exam thing. I was invigilating on my own. I couldn't run after her. So I'm just sat there, spent the whole of the rest of the exam thing praying for this lady and wondering what had happened. When I picked a paper up, it was perfect. She'd done the whole of the first half of the thing perfectly. When I spoke to her afterwards, she'd then turned to a question and seen something she didn't fully understand and just run away. She'd actually already done enough to pass, but there you go. So after that, I used to use that invigilation time as a great time. You've got a captive audience. They're all stuck there doing their exams. And I used to go up and down the rows praying for each and every one of them. And it made the time go quick too, because invigilation is incredibly boring. So that was helpful. It also, I don't know whether or not I did this. I don't think God does do this. But the results are really good too. We got an award for being really high achieving in the Ofsted that we had there. Working at relationships, working at, I've put there, it's a bit of a pun, isn't it? Working at work relationships. For me, that usually means putting others first. Sometimes doing things I don't necessarily want to do. In this group where I work now, last Saturday, a group of them were going into town, doing a bit of a social thing, having lunch together and then going drinking together. not my idea of fun, really. On a Saturday afternoon, we ended up, we went for a nice lunch, and then we sat outside a pub, which Chris now tells me is a notorious gay pub in Manchester. But we were sat in the garden area outside this pub, looking onto the Hayes, and there was four different stag groups all around us at different times. There was people dressed in kilts with sombreros on, and men dressed as women, and all sorts of strange things going on all around me in this thing, which totally is not my idea of a happy Saturday afternoon, I have to assure you. I'd far rather be playing golf or going to a country pub with Ian. But what it did mean is I had to be willing to spend time and give time into this. And it improves relationships. If I won't spend time and listen to people, I can't expect them to listen to me. Another example, Thursday, I was helping a colleague put together a tender. And that involved me ending up staying late, and we had to work on this tender. Ian and I were planned to go out to dinner, and we were going out to dinner with some old friends. So the result of that was I got home, I had to have a quick wash, and we had to dash out. And it's a good job they're old friends, because I don't think they noticed if I smelled a bit, you know, when I got there, because I hadn't had a good shower. But there we are. As Ian said before too, it's loving. Loving is the key. And we all know how to do that. We've got a Lord who shows us how to love, and we just need to love people. The last thing I wanted to talk about too was legacy, and Ian's going to pull this together as well. He's great at doing that, getting all my random thoughts and pulling them into order. The quality of relationships for many of us that we've had will very likely be our legacy. Sometimes I've been lucky enough to have jobs where I feel like I'm doing something worthwhile, and the job in itself is a bit of a legacy. When I was in the Education Action Zone, we were investing in children's lives, lecturing. Sometimes you saw people get qualifications, get their lives turned around, and do really well from it. And that gives you a buzz. But for a lot of us, and I know there's some here who have those kind of jobs, those kind of caring jobs, which are tough, but have got a reward in their own right as well. But for a lot of us, certainly where I am now, I work in PR, what good's that? You know, my legacy will be the impact I make on the lives I touch. And for many of us, that will be true. How do we touch people's lives? And that will be our legacy. So I'm going to hand it back to Ian, because he always likes to have the last word, and he'll wrap it all up for you.
Yeah, I'm going to be quick now because I'm conscious of time. And sorry, we've run over a little bit. But I do want to sort of just sort of highlight is relationships at home. And effectively, what I feel like is very, very important for us, and, you know, guys and girls, is effectively our witness about what we do at home. You know, and the witness that gives to our clients and or our work colleagues or our bosses can be incredible. And I say that because I've put myself briefly, you know, in a situation where I've worked up to 80, 90 hours a week, was incredibly successful, but didn't see Chris for 6 months during the week. So what I do want to do is just sort of say, look, you know, we need to just keep an eye on our work-life balances, and that our witness to our work colleagues and to our bosses can be incredible by showing them that there's a different way. And just to conclude now is sort of, even in the workplace, our most important relationship is with our God. We need to be like Daniel, where we put God first, even if it's going to cost us at times. And the question is, are we showing ourselves to be any different from our work colleagues or our bosses? I've had situations in my life where people, I remember probably Gerwin was probably totally surprised. I remember he was surprised when he found out that I was a Christian. But are we showing ourselves to do anything different? Are we loving our enemies? Are we loving those that are a pain in the butt? Jesus calls us to let our light shine before men that they may see our good works. And Alistair's just about to put the next slide on. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. And I feel like we need to make sure that our lives are exciting enough to get our work colleagues' attention. When people ask us, what did we do for the weekend? It's not sufficient just to say, I went to church and I had a good time. I really believe that, you know, we must be looking to, in our lives every day, show acts of love. And to be used in our spiritual gifts. Daniel interpreted dreams, and for many of us it'll be something different. But can we say to our sort of, you know, work colleagues when they say to us, "How was your weekend?" Can we say we loved on an elderly neighbor and did their lawns or did their shopping? Can we say whether we actually sort of healed somebody that weekend and when we prayed for them? Can we say we gave a word of hope or encouragement to somebody who is sort of needed encouragement? We've got a tremendous opportunity, and and it's important that we live out our faith today. Yesterday's news can only go so far. Today's news, we need that as well. And when we leave our workplace, and we will go to different places and we will find new jobs, what legacy do we leave behind? And because of time, I'm not going to sort of show the DVD, but, you know, effectively, the truth is we need to be conscious of the legacy that we leave behind. And we're not going to be loved by everybody, but we should look to love everybody. Amen. But I'm going to go into, because if you get a chance to watch Mr. Holland's opus, do watch it, because it's an incredible film. So, actually, how are we going to do this? Can we stand? Father, I just want to pray for your sort of spirit to come in this room right now. And Lord, you know there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in each of our lives. And some of us are facing difficult times in the workplace. And some of us are even facing difficult times in our home lives. And I actually feel like that God wants to release breakthrough in those difficult times. He wants to release, for us to see the power of God move in this place. He wants to see the power of God move in the workplace, because we're called to go, let our light shine before men, that they may see their good works. And I cry out, Lord, that you may turn up the light in each of our lives, that we may shine even more brightly than we do now. Lord, we don't want to stick our light under the bed. We want to sort of bring it out into the open. And we want to trust in you. And if any of you feel like that there's sort of stuff that sort of you want some extra prayer for, you know, be it sort of sticky relationship at work, or be it sticky relationship with your boss, or with a work colleague, or a difficult situation, then come forward. But also, I feel like there's sort of stuff going on in people's lives that is really, really tough at the moment. And they need that little bit of extra prayer. Because prayer makes a difference. And I pray, Lord, that we may actually believe that in our hearts, that prayer makes a difference. And I want to give you the thanks and the glory for all the good stuff you've done in my life, and even in this tough time, Lord, that I'm going through, that prayer makes a difference. And so, feel free to come forward. I don't know how you do it.